90.1 FM wishes you a bright winter solstice.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The dire problems we're facing in the 21st century, whether it's a personal loss such as the death of a loved one, or a global one such as climate change and the loss of places that are dear to our hearts, plus the animals and plants that used to thrive among us. Such challenges demand a new kind of heroism. The truth is, we can't confront any emergency, whether it's personal, local, or global, by hoping and praying that the problem will go away or waiting for someone else to act. Our guest today suggests that we not deny our heartbreak. Rather, we must give expression to our grief through our tears, creative work, and sharing our lives and stories with others. This is how we soften that grief and allow compassion and gratitude to infiltrate our being. By opening up to the possibility of wonder from surprising sources, we recognize that even in the bleakest times, beauty is possible. Although beauty can't permanently replace our losses and sorrow, it can break through the walls of powerlessness and melt despair. This is the subject we'll be exploring today with our guest, Trebby Johnson. Trebby Johnson is the founder and director of the global community Radical Joy for Hard Times. And she's devoted to finding and making beauty in hurt places. She has camped alone in the Arctic wilderness, studied classical Indian dance, worked as an artist model, and has been a street sweeper in an English village. She's also an award-winning multimedia producer. She's led wilderness rites of passage and contemplative journeys in clear-cut forests, Ground Zero in New York, in EPA's toxic Superfund sites, the Sahara Desert, and other places. She's the author of several books, including Radical Joy for Hard Times, Finding Meaning and Making Beauty in Earth's Broken Places, and Fierce Consciousness, Surviving the Sorrows of Earth and Self. Join us for the next hour as we explore how to press on with joy, beauty, and meaning in the face of great challenges, both personal and global, with our guest, Trebby Johnson. I'm speaking with Trebby from her home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Trebby, welcome.
Thank you so much, Justine. It is truly an honor to be here with you.
Well, it's my honor to have you and to be talking about this really most precious subject that's just up for all of us, for whatever, whether it's a personal loss or the global loss, it's all up. And I would love for you to start off by telling us the moment. I know that you have lost just a dear, dear person in your life, Andy. He has passed on, and it was a moment when you walked outside of the hospice facility. He had just died. And if you can describe that moment for us.
Yes, it was really one of those life transformative moments. My husband died a little over 3 years ago. He'd had bladder cancer, and he hadn't really been feeling ill until about the last 6 weeks of his life. He was in a hospice facility near Scranton, Pennsylvania, for about two days and a half. And after he died, I was with him when he died, even though it was during the time of COVID. I was actually able to be with him the entire time in the hospice, to hold his hand and to stay there on the couch in his room. And he died, and I kissed him goodbye. I called his three grown children. I called three of our friends. And then I started packing up my stuff to go outside. And I walked out of the hospice facility. It was about midnight. It was August. It was hot. And when I came out the door, the air all around this little facility, which was in a wooded area, it was filled with the song of katydids, which I know some people don't know what they are. They're insects, and they make sounds with their wings, and they go, they say, katydid, katydid, katydid. It was a 360-degree ring of these insects. And I was so stunned. I just put down the bags and listened to them, because it was, for me, it was such affirmation that life just has to continue, that the world does not stop, even though I am in the worst possible hour of my life, possibly, but the world doesn't stop. And these insects have something to do, and they have life to give, and they're going to give it. And so I just listened. And then I put my palms together and I bowed to them. And then I picked up my bags and went to the car. But it was such a gift. It was such a, it was beauty in hard times.
I was reminded of when my own dear husband, Michael, died. And a similar thing happened after saying goodbye, and he had already died and all of that. Everything that you describe, I walked outside, and for me, it was the crows, and they were flying around and cawing. And I thought, life is still happening. And it's like this paradox. I mean, I'm feeling just extraordinary grief. And then there's this life. And it reminds me, Treby, of some years ago, we did an interview with Michael Mead, who's a mythologist and storyteller. And he told, because you said, you know, the life doesn't end. He told the story. It was a Native American story about the old woman in the cave, and she's weaving this tapestry of the world. And she's working on it. It's just beautiful. It's really long, and she has to do lots of work to do it. But she gets up to go to stir the soup. And when she gets up, the black dog, who's been asleep, gets up, and he unravels all that she has knitted together. And the point of the story is she goes back and she sits down without despairing and just picks up her needles again and conceives even a better weaving and starts to weave again.
Beautiful.
I encourage our listeners to go find that program or go to Michael Mead's website and find him telling the story, because he's a master storyteller. But it's like that, that you'd write about the story goes on. It doesn't, it, the earth may rearrange, but it goes on. The story does not end. In any comment on that?
Well, yes. And that's what's, I think, is so wonderful about that moment. And I did a book tour after Fierce Consciousness was published. I drove 9,800 miles around the country and went, and 25 of my friends did a book events for me. And I told that story a lot, maybe even at all of them, because it was so moving to me. And at one of them, a woman said, well, maybe they were singing for you. And I said, they weren't. And that's the wonder of it. You know, they didn't care at all about me. And that's the wonder of it, that the world just goes on. And what's so inspiring to me about the natural world, but also about human beings in times of sorrow and major catastrophe, is that there is just this life force. You know, that like Dylan Thomas spoke about it as the green fuse, you know, that just it rises up through us and through insects and trees and plants and polar bears and people whose houses have been destroyed by fire and flood. And there is some kind of life force that just makes us keep going. And I find it inspiring. I find it incredibly inspiring.
And you also talk about beauty as if we can pause long enough, like you did outside that hospice, if we pause long enough to be infused with that beauty, something is transformed.
Yeah, and I believe, I mean, in my experience is that the more open I am to beauty, the more it comes. Yeah. Like it's everywhere. And if and what was interesting to me is so I brought that first load of stuff out to the car, and then I went back inside the hospice and I said to the woman at the desk, have you heard those katydids? And she said, no. I mean, that's where she works. She was there all the time. And I do think that somehow that it is often in the times when we are most broken and vulnerable that beauty comes through. And Leonard Cohen says it, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Rumi said it. You know, there is something about being broken that allows beauty, kindness, generosity to kind of permeate and dive through that narrow little crack and suffuse us. And we have to be open to seeing it.
And I would imagine what you're describing is that it's a moment of extraordinary vulnerability. If we truly, you talk about descending into our grief rather than ascending and transforming and going up and so forth, but just to get down with it. I want to talk more about that in just one moment because I want to go into this in more depth. I'm here with Trebi Johnson, and she's the author of Fierce Consciousness, Surviving the Sorrows of Earth and Self. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, trebijohnson.com. T-R-E-B as in boy, T-R-E-B-B-E. Johnson.com. That's TrebiJohnson.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Trebby Johnson, and we're talking about grief. We're talking about the rearrangement of our lives personally when there's grief that we're feeling, or globally when we can feel the pressures of all the change that's going on due to climate change and other things. In that grief, one of the things that you talk about, Trebby, is not going into disbelieving. And that's hard. That's hard because we don't want to accept that this is really happening. The earth is rearranging itself and it's our fault that it's happening and other pressures that are moving to change it. And it feels so remote in some ways because we don't see the glaciers melting. Most of us don't actually experience that. We experience other things, though. So tell us, what about disbelieving?
Well, I started to think about that. I write about this in Fierce Consciousness. I started to think about disbelieving when I was a senior in high school, and we were reading Camus' book, The Plague. It became very relevant, that book did, as we went through the pandemic. But he talks about how people disbelieved in the plague. That's where I got the word. You know, they thought that they had plenty of time to make plans. They could have reunions with their family. They could have vacations. And I came from an alcoholic family. My father was an alcoholic. And when he got drunk, he would hit my mother quite brutally. And then the next morning, he would sober up and he would tell everybody, he would tell us all that he was never going to do that again. And my mother seemed to believe him, and I began to believe that that was wrong. You know, my mother disbelieved in the severity of what was happening. So I kind of grew up with that idea that it's really, really important to face the bad stuff. You know, it, like if you get a bad medical diagnosis, rather than saying that it's maybe there's a mistake, like face it. Face climate change. And personally, I think I've gone a little bit kind of over the top with that, with wanting to think too much about everything that was going on at the same time as feeling beauty, I must say. And there is a tendency to disbelieve in the severity of climate change. And I recently read this book by Kim Stanley Robinson, Ministry of the Future. It takes place about 40 years in the future. And he says it's very hard for people to deal with something that is unprecedented. Climate change is unprecedented. So it's not strange that we can't find a way to deal with it. And one of the things that I've learned over the last couple of years is we can't constantly face climate change. We have to, in a way, back off from our own willingness to believe and not disbelieve, but just kind of give ourselves a break and not be 100% conscious of it all the time because it's just too much. So, but the disbelief is it's probably not as bad as they say. Maybe the earth will in her wonderful evolutionary way, take care of things. Maybe scientists will come up with a solution. Maybe God will fix things. But meanwhile, we can't disbelieve. Climate change is real. It's having effects. It's affecting everything. I mean, it's affecting fires, floods. Here in New York State, we're having really fierce winds and heavy, heavy downpours of rain. So as long as we're disbelieving, we can't take action. Once we say to ourselves, okay, this is real, whatever it is, now what? Now it's time to figure out what the first step is.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And I think about taking action. I just recently saw an announcement from somewhere. I don't remember where it came up. And I saw Jane Fonda just a couple of years ago got arrested again. She's in her 80s and she's still active at a climate change protest in Washington, D.C. And there's a picture of her with her hands above her head and her wrists in handcuffs once more. And that's part of it is, okay, even if it's not a big thing, we can do small things. We can get together with our neighbors. I mean, I know that you talk about how it's important that we not go through this alone. And I'd love for you to say something about that.
Well, I think one of the things that climate change has allowed is that it's becoming more acceptable to say that you're feeling grief, despair, anxiety, et cetera, about the state of the earth. You know, a few years ago, not that long ago, if people cried because a forest was cut down or a great tree, like the one we were talking about before we started the program, that in England, you were told that you were anthropomorphizing or you were a tree hugger. And scientists were always very careful to not put their emotions in if they were trying to save a canyon or an insect or a fish or whatever, because then that would mean they were unprofessional. But I think that's changing. I think we are becoming more allowed to feel grief for the state of the earth because we are having to acknowledge that it's taking place all around us.
I'm reminded as you're speaking about that, about, let's say, a place, a beloved place. And there's a story you tell in the book about a young woman who had went to a particular forest. And it was a spiritual journey for her each time she went there. The trees themselves were like guardians of her spirit in some way. And then it got clear cut. And tell the story of that and the essay she wrote and what happened.
Yeah, that's such a shocking story. She was in high school and the trees blew down. I think they blew down in a storm. And she wrote an essay about it. And the teacher read her essay aloud to the class. But what she realized when he finished reading it was that he didn't read her essay to praise it. It was to criticize her for feeling emotion about a forest, for projecting what he said was a human emotion onto a forest. That's not true. You know, she was indeed grieving the forest. And of course, she was very hurt by that. And she ended up, it's a happy ending. She ended up going to Yale Divinity School. And one of her focuses was calling attention to hurt places. But we do feel grief for the loss of nature. And I mean, to me, it's just so important to acknowledge that this grief is real, that we do mind when birds are killed by poisons, when trees are cut down, when rivers are polluted, and when homes are destroyed by violent weather. It's more than just the loss of a home that people mind. It's the landscape, it's the place, it's the ground that you stand on. It's many, many things, and grief is appropriate.
And even it could be covered by a shopping mall.
Absolutely. Oil drilling, coal mining, all kinds of things. It's not just climate change.
Well, I'm also reminded, too, that when you have done your work about beauty in hurt places, you have gone to some places. There was one in particular that I call to mind. It was super fun site, a really terribly toxic site with some sort of chemical company. And there were, you notice when, well, first of all, why did you go there and what was your intention and what did you see next to it? Well, in doing and going, it was like all covered with barbed wire fence and do not enter and all of that. but next to the property were nesting birds.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think that was the helico plant in California.
Right, exactly.
That's in it. Oxnard. And it wasn't I who went there. It was this event that my organization, Radical Joy for Hard Times, does every year in June called the Global Earth Exchange, where it's like exchanging gifts with the earth. And five or six people went to this helico site, which it was a some kind of chemical processing plant. And right next door to it was a wildlife preserve. And there were ducks and geese flying in and out and landing and building nests. And, you know, right next door to it is this highly toxic site. And what we do with the Global Earth Exchange is go to these hurt places, share the stories about what they mean to us, and then make and get to know them as they are now, both in their beauty and their ugliness, and then make beauty for them. Make a simple gift of beauty for them.
And what is the purpose of making that gift of beauty? What does it do for the place and for the person who's gifting it?
Thank you for asking that. It's really quite an extraordinary mystery. This whole event, you know, that I was just describing, it's like it has five suggested steps. They're all suggested except the first and the last. The first one is go to a hurt place. In other words, don't just think about it, meditate on it. And the last one is make a gift of beauty. And there is something about just taking the materials that are there at the site, whether it's barbed wire fencing or leaves, sticks, sometimes trash that you later take out, feathers that are on the ground, and making a gift for that place out of this materials. And on that particular event, we suggest making a bird because birds are universal and everybody knows how to make a bird. There's something about translating or transferring sorrow about what a place is going through into making a gift. And the thing that's relevant about using the materials that are there is a way of acknowledging that all the elements to reawaken beauty in that place are already there. We don't have to haul in a lot of stuff. You know, we don't need sage and ribbons and flowers from the florist and all that. There's something transformative about that. And I don't understand it at all, but people so often say to us after doing this that they fall in love with a place that they didn't even really want to go to in the beginning.
I love that. Thank you. I'm here with Trevi Johnson, and she is the author of Fierce Consciousness, Surviving the Sorrows of Earth and Self. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Trevi Johnson, and she is the author of Fierce Consciousness, Surviving the Sorrows of Earth and Self.